What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer. And in this episode, get ready to travel to Area 51 and unravel a mystery of what was happening below the Nevada Desert in my review of Daymare 1994 Sandcastle. Before we jump into the details of this game's story, let's take a few minutes to talk about some details that you may not have known about the game or its developer in The Breakdown. If you didn't know, Invader Studios is the name of the developer of the Daymare series, and they are actually based in Italy in the Roman countryside, and they are massive fans of survival horror and specifically the Resident Evil series. So if you didn't know, Daymare 1998, the first game in the series, it actually started out as a fan-made remake of Resident Evil 2, and it was so good and getting so much attention that it actually caught the attention of Capcom, to where Capcom stepped in and said, hey, we appreciate the love, guys, but we need you to back off and stop development on this right now. Ironically, just in time for them, Capcom, to actually create their own remake, which I gotta say, we could almost say that we have Invader Studios to thank for all of these Resident Evil remakes that we've been getting over the years and just the amazingness that they are between Resident Evil 2, 3, and 4, hopefully more. Regardless, that is how Invader Studios started, and they were literally a 5-person development team at the beginning. And because of the success around Daymare 1998 and the attention that it garnered, they were able to get the funding for Daymare 1994 and therefore expand their team to a 15-count development studio. So they've been a growing studio over the past few years, and it's just been a really great pleasure to see them kind of flourish and improve their craft from Daymare 1998 to what is now Daymare 1994. And we're about to dive into those details as to why I think there's been an improvement next as we look at this game's story. Our story begins inside the apartment of main protagonist Agent Delilah Reyes, or as she is more commonly known and referred to as from her friends, Reyes. Now, her apartment is pretty much like what you would expect any Hades special agent, which is part of the branch of the Hexacorp Corporation that she works for. It's kind of a military slash government ran operation, and she is a part of Hades. And if you want to look at comparisons to Resident Evil, think of Hades as this game's or this series's version of Stars. So she is a Hades member, and she's just kind of doing her thing in the apartment at the beginning, and you kind of get to explore the apartment a little bit and see what she's got going on, and you can tell she's very, very much involved and cares about her work. It's her passion in life. When ultimately, very quickly, one of her team members contacts her and lets her know, hey, we got to go. We got to meet up now. You got to come down now. We have this very important mission, top secret. We're going to get a briefing when you get there, but come ASAP. Ultimately, what this mission ends up being is one that takes Ray and her fellow Hades members to Area 51. Now, Area 51, obviously, it's been something in pop culture for a very long time, and it fits perfectly in this game and the way the story and the lore plays out. There is, as has always been insinuated, a secret military operation going on here, and we don't know exactly what that is yet, but when brought into the brief, it's very to the point, and pretty much Ray's all she is told is, look, we've lost communication with this base there. There's a lot of stuff going on that's very important information. There's very important things that we need to make sure that we protect, and we got to get there now and find out what's going on. So pretty quickly, Ray's grabs her gear, her guns, and meets up with her peers, and they hitch a ride on a helicopter that takes them out to the desert and Area 51. Now, of course, as you would expect, the story plays out very much like any other movie, game, book would in this scenario, in my opinion. You start out, everything is completely quiet. There's nobody around. I mean, this is a complete base of operations where military personnel, scientists, doctors, all kinds of people were working here, but there's nobody around. And obviously, these characters that you're playing as Reyes and then her peers, they have no idea what's going on. And so they send Reyes to try to investigate into the buildings and gain access to these buildings. And once that happens and you start exploring, I absolutely loved what the story did. There was a lot more context to it than what I thought, because from that point on, I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong, there are some cliche moments in the game that happen throughout. But overall, I really enjoyed certain additions to the story that Invader Studios didn't necessarily have to do, but they did. One key plot point that I really enjoyed following along throughout the course of the game is the plot point revolving around Reyes' sister. Now, her sister disappeared on her many, many years ago, and her sister also used to work for the Hexacorp Corporation. And there's a lot of backstory and things that you find out as you go through the game as to what the true story is to what happened to her sister all those years ago. And there's just a lot of actual meaningful emotion that goes into some of the things that happen. And I really appreciated that. Now, you have the typical plot twist of, you know, there's some betrayal, there's lying, there's a little bit of love in there. Let's just say that overall, it's not going to be an original screenplay Oscar winner, but I thoroughly enjoyed what Invader Studios did ultimately with the story. I mean, it kept me interested the entire time. There is a lot of dialogue that you can overhear in audio files. There is a lot of journal entries or emails, just all kinds of different things that you can read that you come across as you go through and explore the game's world, whether it's in the residential area, the medical area, the research and development, all kinds of different places that you're going to go in this game. And everywhere had a little bit of a different story. And the people that live there and work there, because ultimately this is an underground facility, and it goes many, 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 many layers deep into the earth. And I was actually surprised the further I played into the game. I was like, man, I'm still going down further into the earth. This is crazy. This thing goes for miles underground. But it was really enjoyable, and a lot of what they did with some of the side characters and partner characters, I actually did enjoy. Some of them, you know, I actually was surprised on one twist. That did get me on the one twist. I will say that. I'll give Invader Studios that. But a couple of the other quote-unquote twists I did see coming. But I liked that there wasn't necessarily one main antagonist either. Usually, you know, you have like an antagonist and a protagonist. Well, in this game, I felt like there was multiple antagonists in a way. And I liked the fact that they were kind of paced throughout the game to where it didn't really feel like there was just one forward focus as far as what Reyes was, you know, trying to get to this one end-all be-all who was controlling everything. Don't get me wrong, there is that in there, but it wasn't, the game wasn't necessarily, and the plot moving forward wasn't necessarily just about getting to the end game, if you will. So I actually really enjoyed this story. I did like it more than Daymare 1998. Now, it's not to discredit 98's story. I really enjoyed what they did with the multiple characters that you play as in that game, whereas in this game, you just play as Reyes, which I didn't mind. I actually really liked the character of Reyes. I thought she was really well written. And, you know, if you can actually identify with and enjoy and appreciate and buy into a character that you're playing as, I think that the developers, the writers did a good job and did their part in writing a good character arc or character for the story. So I thought overall the story I thoroughly enjoyed. Again, it's not necessarily the most original, but there were some twists and turns there that I enjoyed. And just in general, it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of pop culture references, as there were in 1998. There is also the returning pop culture references in 1994. And I love that aspect of it, the nostalgia. And just, you know, I grew up in the 90s. So for me, it was just a kind of a trip through those years and that time period. So very, very cool story and a lot of interesting stuff that happens here, and a good twist on the whole Area 51 secret government complex plot point, if you will. And I can't wait to see what happens with the inevitable third game. And I know that Invader Studios had already confirmed a, you know, trilogy for this series, but man, I cannot wait to see where they go with the next one. And if you played the first game before playing this one, then you'll also get to pick up on some cool lore or in-game Easter eggs that if you've played that game, you know, you'll know what they're talking about at certain points in the game of 1994. So that was my thoughts on the story. Now let's go check out my thoughts on the game's graphics and sound. As we begin looking at the graphics and sound of Daymare 1994, I'm going to start first with the graphics. Now, I will say 1998, the graphics, they weren't terrible, but they were definitely kind of mid-tier is what I would say. And when you play and boot up 1994, you can definitely tell the budget was increased for this title. Now, obviously, the success of 1998 was what allowed the Invader Studios to increase their team and their budget. And it was definitely appreciated on my end because it definitely feels like it belongs with modern survival horror games at this point. I'm not going to go out there and say that it's on the same level of quality as Resident Evil 4 or the Dead Space remakes, but it is very, very good and a solid, solid visual game in this day and age as far as the modern tech that we are used to seeing. So when you look at character models, first off, I will say they look great. I mean, for the most part, you know, Reyes, she's the best looking one, as it should be. I mean, the protagonist of your game, you want to make sure that they're what you're going to see the most, right? So Invader Studios does a good job of making sure that Reyes is very well detailed. Her Hades uniform is great. I love the detail of the, once you get the frost grip, which I'll explain what that is in the gameplay segment of the review. Once you get that and it kind of adds to the back of the character model of Reyes, there's different visual cues that you see from that. Different colors like blue and red, and those are all really well done. And just in general, her animations are very smooth. The only thing I would say that I thought was off about some of the character models, some of the her team or partners, they just don't look that great when it comes to their faces. They have almost that, as I've said before in some of my reviews, the paper doll cutout look to them. And on top of that, all of the characters, Reyes included, the lip syncing with the voice acting is just not there. I mean, it's barely not there, but it's still noticeable as you're watching the cutscenes. So I do think that they, again, improved over 1998. But if this game does well and they have just a little bit more increase in budget for the third game, I do think that they will finally be able to realize their full true vision of what they wanted this series to be. Now, when we talk about lighting, I gotta say there is a lot of very poorly lit corridors and dark spaces as you're gonna need to use the flashlight that Reyes has on her at all times. And the lighting is done very well. You know, long and short of it, there are a lot of really cool areas where the lighting plays into the mood and the spooky factor and the jump scares that may or may not happen to you. So I really appreciated the level of detail and quality of the lighting within the game. And I mean, the majority of the game is very dark. It's set mostly at night, and the areas and environments they go into are typically underground. Environments that have either no electricity or there's fires in a lot of places and things like that. And the fire in the game is very solid. Some games fire can look completely fake. In other games, it looks very realistic. This one I would say is kind of in between. So it doesn't look bad, but it doesn't look like, oh, wow, that's an actual fire burning there. So overall, you know, just the lighting and the character models are pretty solid in this game and a definite step up from 1998. As are the environments. I loved the environments and the variety of environments within this game. There are mostly interior environments, but you do get some time outside, so the exterior is still pretty well done. Again, though, it's set in the Nevada desert and Area 51, so even when you're outside, it's a lot of, you know, sand, and again, it's dark during the game, and you don't see a whole lot of detail, but the different things that are set up, like there's a lot of military tents and cargo and all kinds of different stuff that are set up and around, and the buildings, the exterior of the buildings look really great too. I loved a lot of the details within the environments, though, the interior environments. There are a ton of research, you know, offices and laboratories and big hangars. And I mean, you get to a really cool point in the game where you're taking this subway train to different districts underground. I mean, it's literally an underground city here. So you have different districts that you can travel to. There's the medical district, the research district, the residential district. And I love the visual identity of each one. My favorite, can you guess? It was the residential district. And I, for so many reasons, but I loved exploring that kind of environment. There's a hotel that you can go through that's, I mean, just, oh my, it is such a love letter to the Resident Evil series. It's not even funny. There is a very brief outdoor segment where it's supposed to be the, you know, builders of this hidden base have created an underground city to make it look and feel for those that are living there as if they're actually in, say, the back alleys of a New York alleyway or side street. And it's done really well. I really appreciated what the developers did here. And there's even a creepy school that was lit on fire and left in kind of shambles and ash. But there are some areas that didn't burn that you can explore, and some creepy imagery that is on some of the desks. And that was another thing I loved about the visuals, is just the different imagery that you can find as you're going through. In the environments, there's a lot of different things, of course, bloody handprints, things written in blood, different symbols and creatures and different meanings behind those that you'll find out as you go through. So, I mean, just the ambiance and just kind of pulling you into that environment. Invader Studios did an excellent job of doing that. So I really did enjoy the environmental visuals. So overall, I would say visually, the game was definitely solid. Just really kind of needed a little bit of tweaking when it comes to the lip syncing of the characters' faces, as well as those faces in general, kind of looking like those paper doll cutouts that I had mentioned before. Now, when we move into the sound aspect of the game, I got to start with the voice acting, because if you've listened to my review of Daymare 1998, then you'll know the absolute worst part of that game is the voice acting. I mean, I don't know if it was intentional or if it was for budgetary purposes, but man, the voice acting in that game was absolutely horrible, arguably the worst that I've ever heard, including the dialogue. So it's not just that the spoken word was bad, it was the written word that the actors were told to speak was also pretty corny. Now, that could have been intentional, because the whole purpose of this is kind of just to cheese it up a lot, because of those B horror movies that Resident Evil was originally based on anyways, which this game is based on Resident Evil, obviously. But I'll say that the voice acting in this game is better than it was in 1998. But there is still some cheese here. And also, the quality of the voice work is better, again, than it was in 1998. But it is not going to, it is not up to par with what I would say that we as gamers nowadays kind of expect from the games that we play. Like, if you're playing something like Final Fantasy 16, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Spider-Man 2, you're playing those kind of high quality games and that kind of voice acting, it's not on that level for 1994 here. But it didn't kill the game for me. Obviously, if 1998 I love so much, even though it was the worst voice acting I've ever heard, it's not going to be a deal breaker for me in 1998 if it's better than 94, but just not as good as those other games I mentioned. So, not the greatest voice acting, but it's still an improvement over 1998, so I'll take that. I will say the music is vastly improved over 1988. The music was great. I loved the music in this game. From the opening and the main menu music that really gave me Stranger Things vibes. If you know what I'm talking about, if you've seen Stranger Things, there's that kind of classic, in my opinion, theme music that they play when they have the opening credits. I mean, it's very reminiscent of that. So think of like a 1980s kind of vibe when you hear some of the, when you think of some of the songs that I'm talking about, or that main menu song at least. And even it'll come up in different, musical chords and whatnot throughout the course of the game. But even outside of that, there is some typical normal orchestral score that you will hear. And it's really good. I mean, the tension music that builds up to try to scare you and set the mood and kind of be really creepy, that is done really well. It's really well paced and sets up the scares perfectly, in my opinion. So I thought the music was the best part of the sound when it comes to Daymare 1994. Now, I will say the sounds of the creatures in the game, those are done really well too, because there were some creepy moments where all you hear is some kind of almost like choking sound, like around the corner, and you have no idea what you're about to around the corner and find. So, I mean, there were some really cool sound effects in there. I did like sound effects that were related to the frost grip and things that you used as far as weapons, your basic sound effects. So all that stuff overall, I thought was pretty solid. And in general, I thought that the sound, being a step up from 1998 and just across the board was pretty good. Just I would say right there on an average overall score is what I would give to the sound. So that's my thoughts on the graphics and sound of the game. Now let's go find out my thoughts and opinions on whether there's a big difference playing this game when you're wearing a headset as opposed to through a soundbar or a TV. If you've been listening to my reviews for quite a while now, then you'll know that when I play on the Xbox, I typically call this segment Lucid or Asleep. And the segment got its name from the headset that I was using when playing on the Xbox, and that was the Lucid Sound gaming headset, which I've used for the past few years now. It was a great gaming headset, absolutely loved it. But again, if you've listened to my show, you'll know that I have that Starfield headset that was released back in June. And ever since, that's all I've been using when playing the Xbox, and it's been an excellent, excellent headset. So how does it stack up, though, when playing Daymare 1994? Is there a big difference when playing it using that headset as opposed to the alternative for me, which is an amazing LG soundbar? So I will say that the soundbar, first off, it sounds great, right? Everything comes through really well. The explosions and gunfire and things like that, the subwoofer really hits. It adds that sense of a movie theater type experience where you feel the vibrations and the explosions and gunfire around you. Just given the setup that I have, it does a good job of doing that for me. But that's really the biggest thing. The clarity and everything, not a problem. But I got to tell you, and I say this in every survival horror game that I review, it's so much better playing this kind of a game, and this game specifically, with a headset. I mean, not only is the clarity obviously there and just a top-notch level, it's also about the depth of the sound. And there's that Dolby Atmos that Microsoft uses in its officially licensed headsets. And that's no different here in that Starfield headset. And gamers, I got to tell you, if you are walking through an environment, and like I had mentioned earlier, where there's that choking sound and just really creepy noises and the jump out of your seat kind of scares, where you hear just a clang of a pipe around the corner, whatever the case may be, those things resonate so much better and hit so much harder when you're wearing a headset because the immersion level is raised, in my opinion. I mean, if you're playing with a soundbar, you have the ambient sounds of your house or the area that's around you or outside or whatever the case may be, there's still those sounds that can kind of interfere with that immersion level. But when you got these headsets, and it's the noise-canceling headset earmuffs, as these are, man, it is so amazing. I absolutely loved it. And plus, I've always enjoyed in these kinds of games, and any game that has kind of like an audio transmission or you have some kind of communication back and forth with non-player characters, you can also feel more like you're actually getting that message from those characters because of the way it comes through your actual ears and from the headphones and whatnot. It's a different level of immersion. So I would say, is there a big difference when playing using the, in this case, Starfield headset, as opposed to playing just, you know, normal through a soundbar or a regular TV? I would say there absolutely is a difference and definitely worth playing it as much as you're able to or choose to do so. I would highly recommend playing this game using a headset. So now, after we have talked about the graphics and sound, let's go talk about my thoughts on the game's controls. Gamers, in Daymare 1994, you will be controlling Agent Reyes from the third-person perspective, and you're going to be using a dual analog control scheme, as most games in a third person do nowadays and have for years at this point. And the left analog, as you would imagine, is going to control Agent Reyes herself, and the right analog is going to control that camera. I thought that both, there was never any issues I had with controlling Reyes or the camera. I thought it was perfectly attuned to the sensitivity that it needed to be. I also felt like there was the quick turn, the 180 degree turn that a lot of survival horror games have. Not every survival horror. Reyes will immediately do a 180 turn, and it's meant for your benefit as a player, because if you got enemies coming right at you and you want to run away and gain some space in between you and the enemy, it's great for that. So I do appreciate, I don't use it a whole lot, but when I think about it, or sometimes it just kind of inadvertently happens, I do appreciate it when it's there. So that is one thing that you can do with the analog sticks. You can also click in the analog sticks for different functions as well. The left analog stick will allow Reyes to jog. The right analog stick will allow you to do different kind of finisher moves, we'll call them, when using your frost grip. And the frost grip is a huge new addition to this game, and it's a tool that you are going to utilize and want to maximize throughout your entire journey here with Agent Reyes. I'll get into the more specifics of its usage when we talk about the gameplay in the next segment, but for now, I'll just say that you can click in that right analog stick to perform two different finisher moves with the frost grip, and they definitely come in handy throughout the course of your play. So outside of that, We'll look over at the D-pad, and when it comes to the D-pad, all four directions are utilized. Two of them are going to be for switching between the two different weapons that you have. There's only two weapons in this game, the assault rifle and the shotgun, so alternating between the two of them. Now, you can upgrade them. Again, I'll get into that more in the gameplay segment, but two guns that you can designate to whichever direction you want on the D-pad, and then you also have two other tools that you can alternate between, which one is the RF scanner, and the other is the flashlight. The flashlight is self-explanatory as far as its use is concerned. The RF scanner, I'll get into that again in the gameplay segment. Now, using the face buttons, when we look at A, A is pretty much to interact with items in the environment, as it is in a lot of games. B, you actually hold down B to use a med kit. And this is one issue I did have with the controls. One of, if not maybe the only issue that I had with the controls in the game. I hate it when games don't give you an instant heal kind of option. If you've listened to my review of Jedi Survivor, it's the same issue that I have there, where you have to go through an animation or hold down a button and let it go through its circular cycle before you can actually use the healing item. So it's like that in Daymare 94. You hold down B and it has to complete its circular cycle before you actually get credit for the health. Man, that can be so frustrating, and I guess it's meant to increase the challenge potentially of the game by doing that, but I can't stand it. So for me, that's a little bit of a detriment as far as the controls are concerned. Now, I will say when it comes to the Y button, that is something that you can utilize when you get an upgrade to your frost grip. It's called a frost shield, and it essentially shields you or buffers you from incoming damage. And when it comes to X, it's very simply just used to reload your weapons. And speaking of those weapons, just like most any game I can really think of, L trigger on the Xbox is to ready the weapon, and the R trigger is what you want to use to shoot the gun. Now, you also have multiple uses for your frost grip that are kind of tethered to your RB and LB buttons on the Xbox controller. RB, it has two different functions. One, if you hold down RB, you're going to use frost spray, which is a continuous stream of frost that comes out that you're going to need to, depending on the enemy type, leave it on them and let them get blasted by, you know, a certain duration of time to freeze them completely. Or you can tap the RB button in order for Reyes to shoot frost bullets at enemies. And that can be good because the frost spray doesn't always have a good distance to cover. It can cover. So if you have enemies at a distance you want to start freezing earlier, you can use those frost bullets. And these actually worked out really well being on the RB. I thought it made sense because it's right there above the other, you know, trigger that's used in order for you to fire the gun. So it's almost kind of like firing a secondary weapon. So it makes sense that all that is tied to the right-hand side of the controller. Now, LB is also tied to your frost grip in the sense that it recharges when you hold it in, frost cryo, if you have the different items that you need to recharge the frost cryo. It does recharge over time, but this is what you'll use in the middle of a fight if you need to recharge your cryo. The view and menu buttons, they are as you would expect. One pauses the game, the other brings up your inventory. And then navigating the inventory itself is not bad at all. I mean, you have your character screen and the status, your inventory, and it is to an extent like Resident Evil, where you have to manage your inventory. It's survival horror, right? So you have to have that inventory management piece. Unfortunately, it's not as customizable, I would say, as the inventory screens are for Resident Evil anymore. And nowadays, the newer Resident Evils, where you can kind of, you know, turn them sideways, items in the inventory, and just kind of make up your own space in a way. You don't have that level of control in this game, but I honestly never really had a whole lot of issue with managing that inventory space, but that is how you access it. Overall, the controls I thought were actually very solid in this game. Again, the only detriment for me, the negative, the only thing that stands out was I did not like having to hold in the B button in order to heal. I'd rather just tap the B button and have her do a quick injection or something. But that's kind of what I got for the controls. That's what you can expect if you're playing on the Xbox, and know that they are of good quality and everything should be a smooth controlling experience for you. Now it's time to really dive into the details of the game and discuss its gameplay. As As we now begin to dissect the gameplay that you can expect to find when playing Daymare 1994, I'm going to start with what you already know. So Daymare 94 is, of course, a survival horror game, which every survival horror game, the main things that you got to do is basically inventory and resource management. So in this game, yes, there is, as I had mentioned earlier, limited space for your inventory. But unlike the more recent Resident Evil games, and honestly, for a while now, the Resident Evil games have done this, you can actually expand and add more space to your inventory. You can also kind of adjust the positioning of the individual items to give you more room. You can't do that in this game. You do have a little bit of leeway when it comes to the space, but it's not to the level of control that the Resident Evil games have given us recently. And when it comes to the actual resources that you're going to want to manage, there's really only one type of health replenishment item in this game, and that's the first aid kits. And outside of that, the main thing that you're going to want to be focused on is obviously ammo for your weapons. And then there is essentially the replenishment for the frost grip, which I've mentioned throughout the course of the review. And the frost grip is really the most unique feature of Daymare 1994 and kind of what sets it apart from most survival horror games. And I really did love the frost grip. So what you're going to do is there's different liquid nitrogen canisters that can be kind of like an instantaneous recharge to your frost grip. Now, the frost grip does recharge just on its own as you're not using it and as time goes by, but it doesn't really replenish that fast. So if you're in the middle of a crazy hairy fight with a bunch of enemies, which is going to happen quite often, and you really want to make sure to have that frost spray or use a frost finisher or frost bomb, any of the number of things you can use with that frost grip, it's going to be crucial to have one of those canisters on hand to quickly refill that frost grip so you can use it as you see fit. So as you go throughout the course of the game, these items are going to be spread all over the place. You'll find them lying usually on desks or on the ground or in just different random places throughout your exploration. I will say I felt like the game, and this is one of my first negatives here when we talk about gameplay and pacing and whatnot, I did feel like the developers, I feel it was a poor job, in my opinion, of the placement of some of these resources. I felt like there were moments where they would just inundate you with resources. There would be way more than you needed when comparing the kind of or the number of enemy encounters that you had during these areas where you were inundated with resources. Then you would have other areas where there were next to no resources and there is still a lot of enemy encounters, or you go for a long stretch of time and I was maybe accessible to one or two med kits. And it's like, man, come on, guys. Like, you're asking me to get through multiple waves of enemies and all kinds of different stuff and only have access throughout the course of that session, one or two first aid kits like that. I just didn't think it was very player friendly, in my opinion. So again, I get it. It's survival horror. You're supposed to try to survive. But what really, really pissed me off on more than one occasion, I did feel like it was one of those situations where I won't say, I guess it is ultimately enemy over empowerment. And what I mean by this is the enemies can grapple you and they'll grab you and they'll bite at you. And when they do this, they drain health and you can mash the button and try to shake them off of you and push them off. But I got to tell you, you can only get grappled, I would say maybe a maximum of roughly three to four times. And your health is, say it's 100 points, right? 100 hit points. Each grapple was anywhere from 25 to 30 HP taken off each time. And I felt like that was way too much because it's like, man, come on now. Like, if you have a room full of enemies and sometimes the enemies will pop up behind you, you know, there was instances where I felt like it was pretty cheap. I would get a couple of quick successive grapples on Agent Reyes, and therefore I'd be almost dead. And if I didn't have but one first aid kit, or if, again, I was in a stretch where, like I was just mentioning, there was a long stretch in between the first aid kits that were even available to me, it could be frustrating. So I did feel that there is a period here or there where there is just some disparity with the amount of enemies versus the amount of resources they gave you. Now, when we talk about the different exploration that you're going to be doing as you go through, and we'll talk about combat first, since we're already talking about enemy encounters and that, I'll go there first. And the combat in the game, I mean, overall, I thought it was a lot of fun. I will be honest. I thought it was just a lot of fun going through and taking out what they are called as in the game decoys, which are kind of like the grunts in this game. And there are different variations of decoys and, you know, things that can alter the decoys, make them stronger. And that really was frustrating as well in certain spots. So there are these balls of lightning and they pop up and just pop out of nowhere. And what they can do is they can revive corpses that are in the vicinity or in the room that you're in and make them enemies. They can also, if they inhabit an already, you know, active decoy enemy, they will change them from a blue color to a red color. And these red colored decoys, they are much more aggressive. Their attacks, they are much more lethal to Agent Reyes as opposed to a blue colored decoy. And they also sprint much, much faster than the regular decoys. They can dodge some of your shots as well as they're coming at you and you're trying to take them out on the way. So this is where the Frost Grip becomes your best friend when it comes to those red decoys, because it's not enough sometimes to just shoot and fire a gun at these enemies in this game, which, as I had stated earlier, you do have access to two of them. There is the shotgun and the handgun. And there are different variations on these weapons that you can, you know, if you do certain things throughout the course of the game, you're exploring really well, you're figuring out some of the secret puzzles, you can gain access to different upgrades to these weapons, whether it's ammo capacity or damage and things like that. So I did appreciate that aspect that you could upgrade the weapons. And I was very much excited every time I came to them. So obviously different enemies, there's more than just the decoys. These are kind of like on the ground zombies, if you will, is what they look like, but they're really cool looking. Like I said, kind of an electrical vibe to them. And they're kind of nuts because they're pretty quick. Even the non-red ones, the blue ones, can still sprint pretty quickly. So you have to be on your toes at all times. And as I had stated earlier, you know, that quick flick of the down plus A combination where you're doing a 180 turn, that comes in very handy a lot of times when dealing with these enemies. Now, obviously, any other survival horror game, you're using guns and ammo, right, to take them out. The Frost Grip is what I loved about this game. So as I mentioned with the controls, there is something called Frost Spray, which just kind of shoots out a mist of snow at the enemies. And depending on the enemy type, depends on how long you have to kind of keep it on them for them to freeze over. And they will eventually freeze over, all the enemies in the game. And when they freeze over, you typically are able then at that point to either perform a finisher, depending on how much your Frost Grip cryo is filled, the meter at that point, or you can shoot them and they will shatter into a bunch of pieces. So that's always fun when you have multiple just kind of generic decoys running around and you can freeze multiple enemies at the same time, because you can just kind of do a pan and spray, just kind of go left and right if there's a swarm coming at you and get them all frozen. And then it's just a matter of trying to kill them before they end up thawing out, because there is a very short window of time that you have to take them out once they're frozen, or else they'll, you know, thaw and then they'll be coming right back at you. So I definitely enjoyed that. That was the best way, in my opinion, to take out the red decoys, is by freezing them and then performing a finisher on them or shooting them to where they exploded. Now, I would say the Frost Bomb was a nice distance option for the Frost Grip. And if you didn't, because you can increase the range. That was one thing I appreciated as well, is there were upgrades for the Frost Grip as well, including the ammo capacity, the range that the frost mist will reach, the radius of an explosion of a frost bomb, all these different things, they played into the upgrade system for the Frost Grip. So the developer had a really good system in place for upgrades when it came to the weapons as well as your Frost Grip. So I really appreciated that, and I recommend highly to go after them. A lot of the upgrades are mostly for the Frost Grip. They're mostly tethered to a machine that you will come across, and a lot of times secret rooms that are hidden throughout the game world and secret areas that you'll have to either decipher a code through a puzzle, or maybe it's a code that's found in an email or a post-it or something like that around one of the offices that you previously explored. So just keep an eye out for those kinds of things as well. But if you fully upgrade that Frost Grip and you have access to all of its functions, I mean, it's actually really, really awesome to be able to implement whatever you need in a given scenario, but the caveat is you really just have to manage and watch the usage and where that meter is. Because if you don't have the replenishment item, as I had mentioned earlier, the little cryo tubes to refill your gauge, then man, you're gonna have to wait for a little bit for it to refill on its own. And again, it doesn't refill that quick. So when you combine the traditional guns with the frost grip and all these different things you can do with the frost grip, again, the combat can be really, really fun. What really frustrated me is the lack of, in some instances, healing items, as well as what I felt were some poor pacing moments, whether it be the enemy encounters. I felt like there were too many of them and too plentiful of enemies back to back to back. And therefore, you kind of just, it's like the developers wanted to just intentionally drain you of all the ammo you have collected. And I've said this before in other survival horror games, even Resident Evil, where it feels like there are sometimes moments or rooms where you go into, and I mean, you go in there with four first aid kits and I mean, just a ton of ammo in your weapons. And when you come out of it, you have no first aid kits and you're out of ammo in one weapon and you only have a little bit left in the other. And it's like, what? And me and a good friend of the show, Logan Phoenix, check out his podcast, Graveyard Gamer, right here on this channel, as well as many other channels where you listen to podcasts. Him and I have called it the ammo dump is what we really have referred to it as, because it happens so prevalently in these kinds of games and it's frustrating. So Daymare 94 is no exception. It is a love letter to Resident Evil, so I guess it would be fitting that it would also have its own ammo dump sections. But in general, the combat is a lot of fun as you're exploring the world. I mean, you're going to be obviously outside of the combat figuring out puzzles, as I mentioned, and those puzzles can be a lot of fun, some of them, most of them, and they're kind of straightforward, and most of the time the solution is kind of right in front of you or right there in the room near you. The ones that really got me, there are some really difficult ones that you have to kind of crack the binary code, if you will, the computer code, and those you are on a time limit. And man, let me tell you, the time limit, whoo. There is quite a few instances where I failed, and these are essentially permadeath, if you will, permafail. If you do not get the code cracked with the amount of opportunities that you're given, then that is it. You have to reload a previous save, which is what I did on numerous occasions. And you just got to be really quick with it and follow the patterns. But ultimately, as fun as they were, oh man, there was a couple of them that were just brutal. But outside of these kinds of puzzles, most of the other ones, as I stated, are pretty straightforward. So exploring the world, examining the environment, reading documents and files, and seeing different flashback scenes kind of explaining what was happening here at this facility in the desert. There was just a lot here to really enjoy about the gameplay on hand with Daymare 94. Again, a lot of it, not too much of it, is stuff you haven't seen before many a time in survival horror, but the frost grip really set the game apart and I think made it a lot more fun. Not that it wouldn't have been fun otherwise, but I feel like it just really added that extra layer of fun to the game, if that makes sense. Now, save points, just to put that out there, it is just pretty much like you would expect. There are dedicated save points that it's kind of like these military laptops, if you will, is what I'll call them. And they're set up at specific spots throughout the game world. And these are where you can do your manual saves. There are autosave checkpoints that happen throughout the course of your play. And I felt like, for the most part, they were pretty good. There were some spots where I felt like, man, why are we having a checkpoint here? But I would say, for the most part, the checkpoints are pretty friendly with the player. And I did appreciate having a hard save as well, because I just, in every game I play, to be honest, I really would just prefer to have a hard save option. But overall, outside of a few gripes here or there with some of the overpowered enemy encounters and some of the too many plentiful enemy encounters, as well as the spreading out too thin sometimes the first aid kits and the resources, as well as the ammo dump rooms that I referred to, outside of these little gripes here or there, overall, it's a very fun game to play and a lot of cool things to enjoy as you're playing through it. Now let's go check out the ship's chronometer to find out how long it took me to beat the game, as well as find out how long it may take you to beat the game based on your play style. As is always the case when checking out the ship's chronometer, I'm going to first start out with telling you how long it took me to see those credits roll and to be done with the game. Now, right at, I would say, roughly 22-ish hours is what it took me to see the credits roll. I will say that I played 2-ish hours after that in order to get the final two collectible alien bobbleheads that I had missed on my first playthrough in an area. So overall, it took me 25 hours to get to where I felt complete with the game. Now, I played it on Xbox, so it wasn't 1000G that I went after. Anytime a game has, beat it with an S rank or beat it on hard or New Game Plus, typically I don't go back and play through on multiple playthroughs. So in this game, I did every achievement the game had to offer except for playing through it on the hardest difficulty and getting the top rank. And with that being the case, it took me 25 hours to reach that outcome. Now, that was going after every collectible in the game and exploring and taking time to really take in the environments. If you're just really playing the game for the story, I would say you could probably beat this game closer to the 12 to 15-hour mark. I would say you could probably shave 10 hours off if you really weren't kind of scouring the environment looking for collectibles. It's probably a lot shorter if that's the case. Plus, you're not going to be playing through the extra 2-ish hours like I did if you miss something as far as collectible bobbleheads or whatnot. So I would say you're probably closer to 15 hours and you could be done with this game and ready to move on. Now, if you are a completionist and if you are looking to get every single achievement or trophy the game has to offer, you will have to play through it and get that higher ranking, which I would recommend doing probably on a second playthrough, having already been familiar with the game at that point and it just how the systems work and all that. I would say you could still probably run through it on hard, knowing how the game works, in a lot less time than your first initial playthrough. So I would say if you're a completionist going for all 1000G or that beautiful platinum trophy on PlayStation, I'm thinking you're probably looking at about 30 hours overall. So that's the ship's chronometer. Now, let's go see what my final thoughts and review score are. Gamers, as I look back over the time that I spent in Daymare 1994, the sequel to one of my favorite games from a few years ago, I gotta say I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I really didn't expect to get sucked back into it in the way that I did after putting it down when it first came out a few weeks prior to this play session. And once I got back into it, though, and I really started to just have a lot of fun with the Frost Grip and just enjoy the story and the environments that I was exploring, the Easter eggs that the series is known for as far as pop culture references. I mean, everything was just kind of clicking on all cylinders, and I really enjoyed this game, and I can't wait for the third game in the already announced trilogy here. But the negatives that I had, obviously it's got to be addressed. The lip syncing was way off, the voice acting was pretty bad. So that's really the only issues I had with sound, as I had mentioned earlier. But when it comes to the pacing of some of the combat encounters, the lack of resources that I felt were kind of unfair, some misplacement on some of the auto saves throughout the course of your play, and some of the overpowered enemies, in my opinion, just I felt like it was way too much health taken off on some of those grapple situations that I had referenced in the gameplay segment. So when you add all these different things together, I mean, look, it's a well-polished game, it's a good-looking game, and it's a fun game. So overall, there's all these more positives going for it than it has negatives going for it, right? But with all these things rolled up and how we come out on the other end, my final review score for Daymare 1994 Sandcastle has got to be an 8 out of 10. That'll do it for my review of Daymare 1994 Sandcastle. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com. You can also search for Hulk and Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks, as well as find me on social media on X at lostatseagamin, the number one, as well as on Threads and Instagram at lostatseagaming. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.